Hey, before we start today's show, I want to let you know that we have created a guide just for you, because choosing a cosmetology school is one of the biggest investments you're ever going to make. Most people just don't know the right questions to ask before they enter a cosmetology school. So that's why we've created a free video guide featuring over a dozen deep dive sessions on everything from financial aid to spotting school red flags, you know, the stuff you should avoid, to also just the truth about how to make more money in this industry. So don't start your journey blind. Get the uncut inside information you need to avoid the wrong school and start your career with confidence. You can get the guide by going to avedaidaho.com/guide. That's avedaidaho.com/guide. That link is also in our show notes. Now, here's today's show. Hello and welcome to Uncut and Unfiltered Cosmetology Insights with Nathan Shaw, where we help aspiring and current beauty professionals master the business and the craft of cosmetology so that you can build a successful, long-lasting career. Your guide is Nathan Shaw, a dedicated educator and working man's hairdresser who successfully built his schools from his earnings from behind the chair. And on this show, he generously shares his deep industry experience so that you can challenge misconceptions and also teach you the crucial skills that you need to manage your career, even if it hasn't started. Today, we're going to tackle what's likely the biggest investment decision and one of the most important decisions in your career as a in the career of cosmetology, and that's how to choose a school based on location, reputation, and mostly location. We're going to talk about that today. So Nathan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So we know that it's very tempting to pick the school that's closest to your house. You know, I mean, literally just Google it, you know, hit the search. You know, if I'm going to go to a fast food place, I'm probably not going to drive past one version to go to another if it's the same chain. So we're going to talk today about why location should actually be a secondary decision factor in the decision-making of the schools you choose. Because this is such a huge, huge decision. And you have some really practical things we're going to talk about when it comes to helping people choose what school to invest in and invest with a, you know, money dollar sign for the S. You know, this is money. And one thing I want to begin by saying is if you go to avedaidaho.com/guide, and we'll put that in our show notes, you can see my 13, I think I've got maybe 14 videos of there of my interviews with Bailey. And I'll let you say Bailey's last name.
Furstein,
that's right. Yeah, I always mess it up. But Bailey and I had an awesome conversation and answered really kind of the top questions people ask. And she's in charge of junior admissions team. Is that her title?
She's the director.
Director of admissions, right. And so she is the one that has seen, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of people, you know, enroll in your schools. And so you get to hear from her directly with a free set of videos that we created to help you understand and make a good informed decision. So let's dial in on this, Nathan. There's some different ways you can vet a school. And one we talked about on our last show, which is you can really understand their measured outcomes. What are the outcomes that you generally want to measure a school by?
So the ones that are required by the Department of Ed to measure and that should be published are the graduation rate or completion rate, how many people are completing the program that started, the licensure rate, meaning out of those people, how many of them passed the state exams, and then lastly, the placement rate, which means those that did, how many of them are working in the field. Right. You want to make sure that those rates are pretty solid because at the end of the day, that's what you're investing in, right? Is your outcomes.
Right. Let's speak about a few other ways you can measure them. One of them might be like a Google review. Like if you go, you know, look at the school online, it's, you know, Google's going to show up. If I see 200 reviews and I see 5 bad reviews, not like 3 stars, but like 1 star, and they go on a rant, should I run? What do you think?
Well, I would say you probably shouldn't run because you're probably not going to find a business that doesn't have a 1-star review, right? No matter how great they are. And it's more or less, what's the majority of the people saying, right? You're always going to have someone that didn't have a great experience or is disgruntled for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But what's the general consensus, I would say, is the more important thing. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I would also say too, and I've seen this and it's really pretty horrible on Amazon. There's like websites that are dedicated to this where you can put in the URL of the product you want to buy on Amazon and it will then like go through the reviews and figure out how many of them are fake. Right.
Wow.
Yeah, it's fat because so many of them, like, they're just making them anyway. So with this, I would encourage you, if you feel like, wow, everything on this thing is positive, there's no negative, you know, click on a few of the people and see if they've left any reviews anywhere else. And if they haven't, that's probably a sign that they might have bought some reviews, you know. So just be aware of that. That happens. Unfortunately, a lot of businesses will pay for reviews. There's some other elements about choosing a school that I do think that are practical. And one of the reasons that Bailey and your team really focus and encourage people to come see the school in person. And one of those is safety, right? So, you know, I'm sure you've seen schools that are in unsafe places. And again, majority of people in this field are women. And it's really important for them to feel safe. And so I'll combine that with that and sort of just general upkeep of the school. So what are things you want to look for when it comes to safety or just the facilities that, you know, what do you need to pay attention to? What should you see, and what's a red flag if you do it see?
Well, I think number one is, you know, what's the area, the location like, right? What part of town is it in? And say that only because we know, you know, depending on where you're at, there's always parts of town that might be a little bit more sketchy than others. And then when you go in there, what's the overall vibe? You know, I can't think of a better word than vibe sometimes, but that's the culture, right? When you go in there and you feel it, do you feel that it's a place that takes care of its people, that, you know, that there's a general concern for the well-being of the students and the staff and et cetera, you know?
Yeah. I think about when people are happy to be a part of something, they want more people to be a part of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you don't go visit a jail and they're like, hey, you should come hang out with us. You know, they're like, you know, but if you go to whether it's a church or a school or whatever, or a company you go to work at, like, you know, if people aren't saying, hey, you should join here, that's a problem. Like they should be advocates for the school as well. You know, the instructors, obviously, the admission staff, obviously, but you should have it should have a good vibe, as you said. And then also when it comes to sort of like the feel, you know, I've seen some different, you know, images and like of different schools. Do you just want to see order? Do you want to see, you know, thoughtfulness? Do you want to see sort of people respecting this place? I mean, what do you want to look for in a cosmetology school?
No, I think those are all valid, good things you should be looking for. You know, you want to see that they have equipment that works, that they have modern equipment, you know, are the students using things that are relevant, you know, in today's age in the beauty industry, because things are always changing? Are they staying up to date, et cetera?
Yeah. That reminds me of a question that I think you taught, and Bailey probably mentioned it as well, which is to ask the question, you know, what's something new you've added to the curriculum in the last 2 or 3 years? You know, and that shows that they're continuing to add things, right? They're not like, oh, well, we just do it the same way we've done it for 40 years.
Yeah.
Bye. See ya. Thanks. Good to meet you. So let's talk about how you can figure out if someone is investing in the school or not when it comes to trends and things like that. So most of the people listening to this, you know, they've been recipients of cosmetology, but they haven't necessarily, they're on the consumer side, right? So to be on the provider side, what are some things that as a person who owns multiple schools, that a good school should have added in the last 5 to 10 years? And maybe that's too far, maybe 5 years or 3 years, but.
I think a lot of it, to your point, is like, you know, are they using digital curriculum? You know, most of our student body, they should be using a digital platform. That's just the way we teach. Do they teach social media, you know, how to use social media to grow your business? Are they teaching, you know, we have a portion of our curriculum that's about business building, like understanding your numbers and how to build your business, because most of these are going to be small business owners of their own.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt, but I want to mention that I know that's a video that Bailey and I recorded in that guide.
Okay.
Again, that link will be in our show notes or wherever you're listening to this. But she does talk about how your schools specifically teach about the business of cosmetology. And that is a question you absolutely should be asking, and they should have a very clear answer when it comes to, you know, teaching the business side of things. Because sadly, I think many don't.
No, unfortunately, that's correct.
Yeah, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, that's fine. And some might have some very basic things that are in kind of prepackaged curriculums from, you know, that all schools can purchase from. But at the end of the day, like having a true curriculum around, like, this is how you're going to be successful. Because we want to teach them both the practical hands-on skills of how to do the techniques and the technical portion of their job.
Right.
But they have to have those soft skills and those business skills to go out and translate that to making a living. Like, the last thing I want to do is have someone just pass the state board and never be successful making money at this. This is what the investment in themselves is for their career. And so that's very important.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really healthy for those who are listening or considering getting into the industry, you know, that school is like buying a bunch of seeds and you just have to decide where you're going to go plant them. But you've gathered all this knowledge, all this potential. And it's like, well, I want to go find a healthy environment for me to go plant myself and grow. And, you know, you're going to learn things in school, but it should equip you with the right skills, confidence, knowledge to then go plant yourself somewhere and then grow. And then I know that, you know, and Bailey and I talked about these in the videos, is that, you know, so many students are actually able to find jobs while they're finishing school, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I mean, that's pretty amazing. I mean, the job climate in many industries is not great. So that's pretty awesome that you could be in school, not graduated, and they're like, yeah, when you graduate, just show up, you know? That's a pretty awesome thing.
No, it is. It's a great career. It's in demand. Obviously, talked about this with you in the past a little bit, but it's just one of those fields that's not going to be replaced by AI. It's a very hands-on trade that's always going to be in demand.
Yeah. So let's talk about something else. And I don't want to be negative. So well, I'll be the negative. You can be the positive. But I'll say this. Some schools just pack in as many people as they possibly can. Mm-hmm. And student instructor ratios be damned. They don't, you know, it's just like, whatever, I'm going to get. But what's a healthy expectation of how big a classroom can be and still be effective? I mean, can you have a hands-on class that's got 50 people in it, or a classroom of 50 people in it? Or is that tipping the scales?
It depends on the facility and how it's set up, but most of the time that's a little too much. And I mean that in the fact that, like, really, like, what's the instructor to student ratio? If you have a 50 student class, I hope they have two, if not three or more instructors in that class, right?
Yeah.
Because at that point, you're getting, you know, to get the individualized attention you need, especially when you're learning the technical skills, you're just not going to get it. There's not enough time.
Yeah. There's not enough time to come around and watch you do your thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to give you feedback and pointers, because, you know, a lot of times as instructors, that's what we're doing. We'll demonstrate, but then we're going to come around and watch, and like, if we're seeing whether it's improper body positioning, whether it's, you know, just the way you're holding your tools, you know, sometimes it's how you're managing your tools. We'll show you just little tips and tricks that are going to make it more ergonomically correct and give you a better result. And if you have too many students, you're not going to get that type of individualized attention. Yeah.
Yeah. When you think about the schools, what are things that you're really proud of with your schools and the way that you set them up, that you're thoughtful about because you were in the industry? You know, that's how, you know, that's what you built the schools based on money you made in the industry, right? So what are some things that you're proud of? And maybe a lot of our schools do them too, but you go, you know, we really thought about and we did this. And it might be really small, might be huge. But what are some things that you've done to set up your schools that you're like, we thought about that and we do that, and it's very purposeful?
So probably one of the main things I can start with is the way we teach hair color chemistry, which that may just be for cosmetology, but I'm kind of a science nerd. You know, we talked in one of the episodes about geeking out on subjects, and that hair color chemistry, I can go down a rabbit hole. I get so excited about it. But the one thing I found when I was out in the field as a hairdresser and I educated for some product lines, I would go teach classes at other schools before I had one, et cetera. And you just saw how there was such a general lack of knowledge about how the chemistry worked. so that people didn't use the color properly or to their full advantage to get the results they needed. So that's just one example of like really breaking down the chemistry in a way that's super understandable for people that don't like chemistry. But so
does
how
it
they
cost that much more to do a good job?
And it does. I don't think it costs any more. I think it's just more or less arming your staff with the education that they can continue to make sure that that's delivered to the students.
That's awesome. I mean, I was just thinking about from a consumer standpoint, you know, I was working with a friend the other day and he was talking about the construction materials made for something. And I said, well, you know, why do they use this? He said, well, it's just cheaper to use. That's why they use that material, you know. And you end up with a less good of a product and less good of an outcome, and consumers aren't as happy because they're trying to save money. But it sounds like everyone could do a great job with hair coloring, but it's just a matter of like, they just don't know how to, you know, it's funny. Like I think about, I've seen so many of these different cooking shows and they give them an ingredient. I'm like, oh, I have that in my fridge. I have that in my fridge. At the end of the show, I'm like, oh, I can't do that because I don't know how to cook.
Yeah.
So it really is teaching people, here's the ingredients that everyone has access to, but we're going to teach you how to use these ingredients in a way to sort of, if I can carry the analogy, like make you a chef versus like a hack, you know, like just a single dude making macaroni and cheese, you know what I mean? So that's great. That's great that you guys really focus in on that. Are there other things that you are focused on when it comes to, you know, whether it's sanitation or, you know, just, you know, how the place is kept up? I mean, one of the cool things is, and I would encourage people to go check out our videos, because I know you've seen them, Nathan, that the videos that I did with Bailey, where I interviewed her, who's the director of admissions for the schools, she's sitting in an area where all these booths around her. I think we did it after hours or something. There were no students there at the time. But I just think it's amazing how it's all set up. You know what I mean? Just it just screams like hands-on learning, you know, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah. And I think that's something that we've really tried to do is create as much of a real world salon environment as possible so that, you know, what they're doing feels just like it will in a salon when they graduate, you know? And so that's a big focus of ours, you know, and equipping them with the proper tools, both in products and tools that they can use after graduation. It's not like, oh, I don't have good enough stuff, I've got to upgrade.
Yeah. Let me ask a question that I think is really practical, and hopefully you'll be prepared to answer this. If not, I'll delete it, but I think you're good. What is an expectation someone should have? And I know your team could talk to people about this. Like, you know, if I randomly follow like this welding school on Instagram, and I think it's fascinating because they teach these kids who have never done anything hands-on, and then they, you know, and they're like 8 weeks, they become welders or something like that, you know? And it's like, all they need is like a helmet and like some and gloves, and then like they're good to go, right? In your business, there's a lot more things people need, right? All right. So what is an expectation how much they would need to spend on gear to be able to maybe say, hey, this will get you through school, and you know, your first 2-3 years, and you'll be fine. Do they have to spend $5,000 or $1,000 or $500? Like, what's an expectation of what they would need to buy, and how much of it do you guys provide?
Yeah, so that's a pretty big question, depending on the type of gear and what type of work environment they go into.
Sure,
but our student kit, which I mean includes their curriculum, you know, an iPad, the whole bit.
Oh, I see.
But also has all their tools.
Oh, great.
Meaning like their scissors, clippers.
So you provide all that.
You
provide all, that's great. So I think about that, but that's going to be hard to separate because it's part of your overall tuition, right? Gotcha.
But
is it a red flag if someone doesn't provide that?
I think it's and this is hard to know if you're not in the industry, but I do think it's a red flag if the quality of tools they are giving you or the kit is very inexpensive because they're trying to sell you low quality items and tools. For example, the brushes that we give in our student kits, the round brushes to style and blow dry hair with, were the same ones I used in the salon. You know what I mean? I mean, we make sure we give them quality tools because we don't want, you know, when I went to school, I got a student kit as well. And it kind of got me through school, but like everything I had was pretty chintzy. And when I got out, I needed to buy new stuff to be more of a salon grade equipment, if that makes sense, right. Whether it's blow dryers.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, hot tools, et cetera. And so
I can imagine the feeling if you graduate and then you're like, yay, oh, wait, my first three paychecks are going to buying stuff. Right.
Exactly.
Versus coming out and going, hey, I've been using this stuff for the last year and a half and I'm just going to use it on Monday at my new job. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So that's a big focus for us too, is making sure the quality of tools that they're getting is up to par for the salon world, because the last thing they need after they just invested a year of their life or more, like you said, and thousands of dollars to go to school, is be like, oh, now I need to go invest in better tools, you know?
Yeah.
We want them to be prepared.
And I think we've talked about that. There is a time to get better tools, but I don't, you know, paying 10 times as much for something is not often going to give you a 10x result.
Correct.
Of outcomes, right? Yeah. You know, yes, if, you know, if you're buying a horse versus a plane, you're going to get there faster on a plane, but that's not, you know, at some point, you know, cutting is cutting. So let's talk about a few more things when it comes to choosing a school based on location. Mm-hmm. Give me some examples of how far you think it's reasonable. Do you have students who drive 90 minutes regularly? What's a space you think someone could sustainably drive?
I think sustainably, it's going to depend a little bit on the person as well, right? And their tolerance. But we have quite a few that drive up to an hour each way to school. And, you know, there's some that they definitely pass other schools on the way to us. But it's one of those things that, like, again, you think of the size of the dollar investment they're going to make to get an education to get licensed. To add in that extra investment of obviously time, but also, you know, whether it's more fuel expense and car maintenance or whatever, but that is kind of arbitrary in comparison to what they're trying to prepare themselves to do.
Absolutely.
So we do have quite a few that have a decent commute, but, you know, it's for a short window of their life, and it's to put themselves in the best situation possible so they can be successful after graduation.
Yeah, and I generally don't let people complain about commuting because they have podcasts now like this they can listen
right?
to. When I was young and I had to drive, I was at the mercy of, you know, my tape collection and then CDs, right, or the radio. So, you know, worst case scenario is you're listening to more episodes of the podcast. So we hope you enjoy your commute, you know. But in all seriousness, commute can be a great time for learning, right, whether it's this shows or others. And so it can be a great time. And I, you know, I'm guilty of turning on YouTube. I don't watch it, but I've got it on, right, because I just want to be learning. You know, and happening all the time while I'm driving. So that can be another benefit. It's like, don't say no just because it's an hour. You can actually use that hour. I'm, you know, I'm sure some of these people are moms. It's like you can decompress before you get home. And you go, okay, now I can come in home and I'm, you know, I'm not going 10 minutes and it's like kids are there. So that's great. The last thing I want to ask you about is when you call a school and you're talking to them, what do you think are one or two of when it comes to sort of like what are things that every school should be pushing you towards in a healthy way? Should they be pushing you towards come visit us? Is it a red flag if they're pushing you to make a decision and put down a deposit on your first call? Like, what kind of things are good and what things are bad? Because again, people are going to listen to this and they're going to start to make decisions about schools. So what are some green lights and red flags, if you will?
So, no, I think that's a great question. And I think that's something they should be encouraging to come check out the school. That's great. But if they're, you know, I feel if it's a high pressure, you got, you know, put down the deposit and roll before you leave the building right now. Maybe you're prepared to because you've already done enough research, but sometimes it's got to be more like they've got to be okay with the fact that you're going to go look at the competitors, the other options.
Interesting.
Because if they're not willing, or not necessarily willing, but they're not comfortable with you doing that, that's not necessarily a great sign, right? We're all going to help prepare them for the same license, but, you know, are they in the right culture and atmosphere for them that's going to best benefit them? You know, and I think that's something that we kind of pride ourselves in is, and I love, you know, you bring up Bailey, the director of admissions. I feel our admissions team, one thing we've really focused on is having people that they're in a role where they want to help people.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to help people get in a career to help them succeed. It's not about like, hey, let's high pressure and get as many people to enroll as possible so we have the biggest school or the most numbers, it's like, hey, let's help people. And in helping people, you know, that's how we succeed as a business.
I remember Bailey, I was talking with her just last week about some other items, and she was saying that one of her favorite things to do is to go, you want to see the school? And I show, get her phone and start to give them a tour.
Yeah.
You know, you know, she wants you to come in and meet the staff, and you have several campuses. But you know, it's like they should be ready to show you the school at any time, you know?
Absolutely.
And that's a good vibe. And it's a good check of the school. So last thing I'll tell folks, avettaidaho.com, /guide is, and that link will be in the show notes. And then I want to encourage folks, and Bailey made mention of this, that she wants people to reach out and ask hard questions. She loves people who are researching, who, you know, have unique life situations and need to figure out, hey, I need practical answers to this. I will also tell you, though, Bailey's, a lot of times her answer is going to be, yeah, it's hard work. You know, Bailey is very honest, and she loves to talk about, like, we want students who are ready to work hard, because hard work pays off, literally pays
absolutely
off when you're in these schools. And it's a great, great career to not spend 5 years going to school hoping you might get a job. You can go for much shorter and get a job much more quickly in something that you really are passionate about. So last thing I want to ask is, Nathan, just so folks know, where are your schools and potential schools you're working on? Go ahead.
Yeah. So we have 3 in Idaho currently. We have 1 in Boise, 1 in Twin Falls, and 1 in Pocatello. And we'll shortly be closing on 1 in Hendersonville in the Nashville, Tennessee area.
Yeah. And
there's a few others in the pipeline, but yeah, those are the current ones.
Very cool. Yeah. And Hendersonville, just so folks know, it's just a suburb of Nashville. I mean, I live in a suburb of Nashville, so I can be downtown in 40 minutes, you know, on a good day, and much longer on a bad day. But Nashville is like many big cities that, you know, there's a greater Nashville area that's another million people, and then there's Nashville itself. Yeah, you'd be able to serve a lot of people at the Henderson area. That's a really cool area. I love to go up there. So that's cool that you're opening one there as well. Nathan, as always, thanks for your time and your expertise and your wisdom. And I'm sure that this will help a lot of folks. So thanks.
Likewise, I appreciate it, Andy.